21-2218, Google versus Hammond. Mr. Jakes, please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. Claim 18 is invalid for two different reasons. One is issue preclusion or collateral estoppel based on the other IPR proceedings. There are no substantial differences between Claim 18 and the other claims that were invalidated. And second, the board's finding that Claim 1 of the same patent, the 816 patent, is unpatentable. Hammond has not appealed that. That's inconsistent with finding Claim 18 to be patentable based on the very same prior art. Now, these three Hammond patents that we're looking at, they are directed to essentially the same invention. You can look at the claims. There really aren't any substantial differences between the ones that are at issue here, claims 14 and 19, and the other claims that the board invalidated.
Can I ask you, why is it that the difference between claim 14 and the claim that was found invalidated, claim 18, is distributed software applications? One claim has a plurality of servers, the other one has, I think, one or more servers, but the big difference seems to be distributing software applications. And what is your reason for why it is that that is doesn't present a new patentability determination?
The reason is the board already decided. If you look at the appendix at pages 82 and 83, that exact issue was addressed by the board. And as the court knows, the claims do not have to be identical. What have to be the same are the issues. And so that issue of a plurality of servers with distributed applications, it was addressed. The board found from Gilmore and Creamer that it was known, obvious, desirable to, quote, host each of the applications on separate servers, each executing its own application.
As I understand it, it's your position that that since that was not appealed, that that is an admission. Then it becomes an admission for our consideration that these there's no material patently distinct, or I think forget what the exact issue
right.
is, whether it presents a new question of patentability. That's that we have to take that as something that's an admitted fact.
It's a finding by the board. Yes, it is. And it has not been appealed. And
well, a finding by the board, which hasn't been appealed, and so therefore is an admission. I mean, they can't, that's the argument, right? They can't dispute it at this point.
That's right. It can't
be
disputed.
Law of the case?
It would be law of the case. For our purposes, it's a finding by the board that shows there is not a new issue of patentability raised by the plurality of servers, because that issue has already been decided. As I said, the identicality has to be with the issues, and are there any new issues presented here? And there has to be some explanation how this plurality of servers executing applications on two of them would change the invalidity analysis, and that question has been answered by the board already. So there is no new issue. And based on collateral estoppel and the only argument that Hammond has raised, those claims should be, claim 18 should be held invalid. Now,
can I just a step back question. Mm-hmm. I had a little trouble finding an answer to this. So exactly how do we express in our law, because it's a question of Federal Circuit law on this point, whether or not the issue is identical to the one decided in the first action? We have some materially distinct, whatever. Tell me what you think that legal test is in particular.
Well, there are several ways that this court has articulated it. If you go back to the Borens case, which is one of the fundamental cases, I believe, from the Court of Claims, it says the differences between the adjudicated and unadjudicated claims relate only to things known in the art. That's clearly what we have. That would be one way to express it. Another way is in the Sovereign and Ohio Willow Wood, they said the patent owner has to explain how this additional limitation would change the invalidity analysis. It doesn't change the analysis.
Okay, so let me ask you a different question, which is I generally think of collateral estoppel, and I think it is a question of law, but is what we're talking about now potentially, and I'm not saying they raised fact issues in this mm-hmm. case, but I just want to understand my own thinking about it. What I could not find anywhere in any Federal Circuit case was a clear articulation of whether these kinds of analyses are questions of law, questions of fact, mixed questions. They seem to me to be like mixed questions like claim construction or obviousness. It's a question of law, but there could be, and maybe there aren't in this case, right, but there could be facts that need evidence or expert testimony on just how different these things really are.
And whether the differences were known in the prior art.
Right. Does that sound like the right articulation?
That sounds right. Collateral estoppel or issue preclusion should be decided as a question of law. If you have those types of factual questions, I don't think collateral estoppel is appropriate. And if you go back to cases like...
When you say you don't think it's appropriate, wait, you don't think it's appropriate for us to do an appeal if there were these disputed facts. It could still be appropriate. It's just that a fact finder would first resolve the facts.
That would be correct. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
But if you go back to cases like Borns and Westwood, one of the ways they express it is to go back and, in an obviousness inquiry, look at the Graham inquiry. Are there any new Graham factual issues that would be raised by the claims that are being challenged? And here that's clearly not the case.
So you're saying if you have to do a Graham factor analysis, then you're outside the world of collateral estoppel. You cannot apply collateral estoppel because you no longer have identity of issues?
I would agree with that, Your Honor. I think that's what it's a fair reading of those older cases as to whether the issues are identical.
But you're saying here for Claim 18, everything is essentially fully baked?
It
in
is.
In the sense that the claims are... I don't know, let's just say 90% identical, and then the final 10%, we only need to go back and look at the board decision for the answer to that 10%.
If you do, yes.
We don't have to go back and look at the board decision for the answer. We only have to look at their failure to appeal the board decision, which is an admission that that was, in fact, well known, which is what the board expressly said.
That's exactly right. And the board actually says that
you wouldn't even have to agree it was well known, and it's not up to us to go through that analysis again.
That's true.
Is that accurate?
Yes. And if you read what the board says about that as well, at Appendix 83, the board said that Hammond did not contest that distributing software applications across multiple servers was well known.
So what about the other claims in this case? You're not relying on a collateral estoppel theory to go after claims 14, 15 through 17, and 19. Is that right?
That's right. We think there's an easier path there, at least with claim 14, because claim 18 depends on claim
right.
14.
And then I guess that the question is, are you allowed to, at this stage of the game, use collateral estoppel as to claim 18, and assuming you're right about claim 18,
right,
to use that as a springboard to go migrating into other claims and enjoy the benefits of collateral estoppel as to the claim scope of claim 18, to then apply other doctrines in addition to collateral estoppel to try to knock out all these other claims.
Well,
You know, we are living under SAS. And, mm-hmm. and SAS talks about certain restrictions as to all of us as players in this game, whether it's the courts or the parties, as to what they can do going beyond the strictures of the petition. So I guess the question is, given that you didn't even respond to any SAS-like argument made in the red brief, in your gray brief, what is your response now, today, about strictures of SAS that we must be sensitive to?
Well, fundamentally, our position is based on collateral estoppel with respect to Claim 18. And once that's determined, whether you say it's collateral estoppel as to Claim 14...
You didn't, though. That's the problem. You didn't make the... Collateral estoppel is a waivable argument.
That's
you
true.
Did not argue before either the director or us that Claim 14 should be held invalid for collateral estoppel.
No, we rely on collateral estoppel with respect to Claim 18 and then the established legal principle that an independent claim that relies on an invalid claim for obviousness is invalid.
Are you aware of any cases in the IPR context where that doctrine has been applied, even post-SAS or pre-SAS?
I'm not. I mean, Callaway Golf is the case we cited, and if you go back to Ormco in those cases, I believe they come out of the district court. And so I don't know if that has been applied in the IPR context precisely the way we are.
I guess it would be unreasonable, you would agree, that if you had never challenged Claim 14 in your IPR petition, for you to now ask us to invalidate Claim 14 in view of if we would agree with you as to the unpatentability of Claim 18. I agree that's unreasonable.
I think that's fair, yes.
Okay, yeah. But I guess, so your argument must be because Claim 14, in your view, was put into play, even if it was for a completely different basis in theory, it doesn't matter. You should be able to, at this point in time, apply other doctrines in combination with collateral estoppel as to Claim 18 in order to make Claim 14 go away?
That's correct. I think that legal principle on...
But what about SAS? I mean, in the end, we can only go so far, can't we, as to what we can allow you to do in terms of trying to knock out claims.
Yes. Well, collateral estoppel wasn't available to us in the petition. It's only available at this point because...
And that's okay. B&B Hardware says you can raise collateral estoppel. So the 483 was decided in April of 2021. 60 days later, it wasn't appealed. It became collateral estoppel effect June 21st of 2021. You couldn't raise it in the petition.
That's right.
And that's why you are allowed under B&B Hardware, the Supreme Court decision, to raise it now in front of us and why we're open to it with regard to Claim 18. You didn't make the argument with regard to Claim 14, and that's the problem. You didn't make a collateral estoppel argument with regard to 14, 15, 16, 17, or 19. You could have in your brief.
That's right.
You didn't.
We didn't, because...
So I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, why should we let you do Petition 2.0 at this point?
I'm sorry, my clerk just said June 14th of 2021. Don't want to get my dates wrong since I was so brazen as to put them out there. Go ahead.
So, getting back to my question... Why don't we allow you to do Petition 2.0 now at the appellate stage?
I'd say because we're allowed to raise collateral estoppel now as to Claim 18, which we could not before.
But you did.
We
did. You could win on Claim 18, but still lose on 14 because you waived collateral estoppel as to 14.
Can I ask you a hypothetical? Okay, well, let's assume collateral estoppel.
Could you please answer my
question? Sorry.
Well, I don't think there's any violation of SAS because... We could not put this argument as to Claim 14 in our petition.
But why didn't you waive it on appeal? You didn't raise it. You didn't write the collateral estoppel argument on appeal.
No, we raised the Callaway Golf principle that an independent claim that relies on an invalid dependent claim is also invalid.
And you could have raised that in your petition. That's been
not based on the fact that Claim 18 was invalid for collateral estoppel. You know, that would have been a prior art argument, and we went the other direction.
I'm sorry. I was just going to ask you,
setting the collateral estoppel argument aside, let's say we had a case where there's different prior art that rendered a dependent claim invalid, but the independent claim, because of the way it's presented to the petition, is not invalid. Just setting the whole collateral estoppel issue aside.
Right.
Does SAS prevent us from relying on the Callaway Golf principle to go ahead and say, well, because the petitioner proved that the dependent claim is invalid, we're going to say that's good enough and also hold the independent claim invalid?
That's a close question. I think that there might be some SAS issues there. Since we couldn't raise collateral estoppel earlier, I think it does take it into a different place on that. I'd also say that if you read the red brief, they haven't challenged our position on claims 14 and the other dependent claims. They are silent as to that and only re-raise the plurality of application servers issue. They haven't made this argument that we cannot
Red brief 23, they rebut your Callaway Golf reliance by saying you have it backwards in terms of trying to knock out Claim 18 and then through Claim 18 go backwards to knock out Claim 14.
Yes, but ultimately their position rests on the difference in the claim, which is the plurality of application servers. And I think once that issue is resolved...
Well, when you say ultimately rests on the difference, no, they cite Soroka Dental, and they specifically cite the portion quoting SAS, saying, and they expressly say in the text of page 23 of their red brief that you didn't raise this in your petition.
And no, we did not. You're right. But since the collateral estoppel issue as to Claim 18 only arose afterwards, that's when we made this argument.
So can I just ask about consequences? So, I mean, it seems to me that if we were to invalidate Claim 18 for all the reasons you've argued, I mean, Claim 14 is effectively dead at that point anyway, even if we can't render it so. I mean, it seems like it would be an antitrust violation to assert it at that point in time.
I agree that it would be for practical purposes.
Is there a parallel litigation here?
There is a district court case that is still...
So hypothetically, what would happen to that district court litigation if we would reverse on Claim 18 but no other claim? Would it go forward on 14, 15, 16, 17, and 19?
If I were in the plaintiff's position, I would not. But that's not for us to do.
Well, you would on you wouldn't on 14. You wouldn't go forward on 14. But 15, 16, 17, and 19, I mean, the Patent Office never addressed whether the dependent limitations in those claims did or did not create some distinction, right?
Not those specific claims. The limitations in those claims were addressed by the board as well. I think we put that in our brief.
Parallel dependent claims.
And showed all the other parallel dependent claims had also been effectively addressed.
Okay, well, thank you. We used all of your time. How about we'll hear from the other side and we'll restore your rebuttal time. Please tell me how to say your name.
Grochosinski.
Because I've been calling you Gronk in my chambers. Gronk. You know, you've been getting the benefit of a really good tight end.
This has happened before to me, Your Honor. So,
okay, go ahead. I'll try to. Say it again so I get it.
May it please the court, Tim Grochosinski.
Grochosinski.
On behalf of Hammond Development International. Your Honors, as you're aware, Google doesn't dispute it failed to meet its burden at the PTAB with respect to Claim 14, and it doesn't dispute the PTAB's finding with respect to that claim on the grounds presented in the petition. They were the master of their own petition. They chose what they wanted to go with for all of these claims, and they should be stuck with that. What they're effectively asking this court to do is give them a redo or a do-over, okay, and rewrite, although indirectly, the grounds that they actually sought.
Well, why don't we just jump to Claim 18?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because that, to me, it seems like is the hardest case for you. So why don't you start there?
So, Your Honor, they have an obligation with respect to Claim 18 to, as the court's aware, meet the collateral estoppel elements. There's two points I want to make with respect to that. The first one is they failed to even articulate what their burden is, let alone show how they've met it. And part of that stems from the fact that they applied the wrong framework, the domino approach that this court has said you cannot do. By focusing only on the leftover elements, so to speak, as opposed to going through all of the elements.
Let's assume that they did go through all the elements in their claim chart and everything else, that they did do a claim as a whole approach. And
yes, sir.
So go ahead and get to this real substance then of
sure.
The problem.
So the substance of the problem, and the first point I want to make is, one, they don't even say what their burden is. Okay, Your Honor, Judge Moore, you brought up B&B Hardware. Well, B&B Hardware says that when you have different burdens, so you have a burden of preponderance, rather, at the PTAB, and then you have a clear and convincing evidence standard at district court, but you can't use a lower burden to apply collateral estoppel in a higher burden environment. Well, so here we have Google trying to invalidate claims for the first time raising collateral estoppel, and they're not even explaining to this court what their evidentiary burden is.
Well, it was the same. They're using a prior IPR decision than an IPR decision. There's no difference in burdens.
But they're applying collateral estoppel. So if had they applied collateral estoppel at the IPR context, which obviously they couldn't have since it didn't exist, it would have been a preponderance standard. But if this goes back, let's say, to the district court, and they were to argue collateral estoppel, there would be a different standard that would be applicable at the district court for that collateral estoppel analysis.
But this isn't in district court.
Yeah,
this is in an IPR.
I understand that, but this is an appeal where the first time this is being raised, and it has never been raised before.
It could have been raised before. I just went through the dates.
I understand, Your Honor. The second point I want to make with respect to the burden, though, Your Honor, is the wrong framework. And so here what we do is we isolate that one, the request for processing limitation. We pointed out in the claim charts, Judge Chen, that there are differences in these claims, okay? Google, all right, in their opening brief, in their blue brief, I devoted one paragraph to the differences. They never do an element-by-element analysis. They never account for even the fact that there are differences, aside to say that the only difference is a one or more servers, plurality of servers. Respectfully, that's not the only difference between these claims.
Which difference did you focus on, or any, in your red brief?
So in Claim 14, Your Honor?
Yeah.
It is the first server, first application, second server, second application okay. limitations.
And that's claims 14 and 18, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
18 is the only one we're considering for issue preclusion collateral estoppel.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so what other difference did you focus on?
That is the sole difference that we focused
okay.
on.
Well, then that's where you should be focusing.
Understood, Your Honor. And so the point is Google did not meet its burden of explaining why that difference does not materially alter the question of patentability, a burden that lies squarely with them.
Okay, so you're making, I think, a procedural argument, and you're saying that their argument was too underdeveloped in their blue brief. But let's assume for the moment that we're not going to think about this case as to in terms of whether the blue brief was too short and concise and pithy versus having written 10 pages on this subject. Let's just get down to the actual substance of the question. The blue brief did go back and say, this board decision, underlying board decision, already made all the findings that are necessary as to this question about server 1, server 2 at pages A81 to 83. And so that, assuming that's the case, then why can we, what is blocking us from applying collateral estoppel as to claim 18?
So there are two points I want to make with respect to that, Your Honor. One is the legal framework doesn't just say that if it's known in the art, then you're done. Okay? The Westwood Chemical case and the other cases that are relied upon by Google say that known in the art isn't good enough. That doesn't get you across the finish line in terms of meeting your burden. You have to go past that, do a Gram factor analysis, and Westwood Chemical explicitly says that if it's known in the art in that scenario, then you have to look to and analyze the importance of that element in the context of the combination and the invention.
Right, and that, here at A82, the underlying board decision said, we agree with expert so-and-so that it would have been obvious to perform this claimed invention in the context of having two servers with each server executing its own application. And so in that sense, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to pluck that finding that you didn't appeal and see how it maps up to what is the missing limitation with respect to claim 14, claim 18 in this case, compared to the previously litigated and invalidated claims, to see how there is a conclusion that whatever minor difference here is, it's not a material one.
But respectfully, Your Honor, I think that there is a difference between what the board found and what claim 14 actually requires. And if you look at this board's finding was made in the context of claims 7 and 8 of the 816 patent, which I think I recognize what the board said, but I think it's informative to look at what they were targeting when they made this decision. Okay. And so if you look at claims 7 and 8 of the 816 patent, and this is at APPX 123, claim 7 is the plurality of servers element. Okay. But what I want to focus the board on, or I'm sorry, the Your Honors on, is Claim 8. So Claim 8 is talking about distributing voice processing software program across the plurality of servers. Okay, so if you look at Claim 1, from which Claim 8 depends, there's two parts to Claim 1 I want to bring to the court's attention. There's the voice processing software program, but there's also separately recited an application. So Claim 1 requires an application, and it requires this program. Dependent Claim 8, which is what the board was relying upon this distributed architecture language about, is focusing on distributing the voice processing software program across the servers. I'm bringing that back to the context of Claim 14. Claim 14 is not talking about taking a single program and distributing it across multiple servers. Okay, in fact, dependent Claim 15 actually says that. Dependent Claim 15 talks about how you're just going to distribute the voice processing software. Okay? Claim 14, though, is talking about something different. It's actually a different architecture. It's not talking about distributing a software application across multiple servers. It's talking about putting a first application on one server and a different second application on a different server. Now, I respectfully submit there is a difference there. The difference is taking a single program and putting instances of it across multiple servers.
What about Claim 9 and other parts of the specification that say that the voice processing program is actually at least three applications?
It can be, Your Honor, yes. And so in that instance, you would distribute that. I understand the distributed argument to mean you're going to take an instance of this and you're going to distribute it across servers. So that way, if, let's say, one goes down or there's a myriad of technical reasons.
I'm just wondering whether it's just different words. I mean, because one, you're referring to software program, but the specification says that that's multiple applications. So I'm just trying to understand. It sounds to me like you're just saying because they're different words, they mean something different, and I'm not sure that's necessarily so in light of the specification.
I was not trying to say that. What I was trying to get at, Your Honor, was that I think there's a difference between claiming an application and then in a dependent claim saying that application is going to be distributed versus, okay, claiming a specific application on one server and a different application on a different server.
Okay.
And that's the technical difference that I'm trying to point out to this panel, okay, in terms of why I don't believe, even if we kind of take Google's other failures and we sweep them under a rug, I still think when you get to the heart of this issue, Judge Chen, there is a difference. And that difference was never addressed by the PTAB because they didn't have to address it.
Okay, I'm going to ask a question. I'm sure you can point me to the exact right place. I'm having a little trouble following your argument about this difference, and I'll certainly listen to the argument again after this. Where in your brief exactly can I find that argument so I can use it as a resource when I'm trying to understand?
So, Your Honor, this was made to be here. In Google's opening brief, this was never raised. They never identified the difference. We point out the difference throughout our brief in terms of Claim 14 has these different claim elements that were not decided. It kind of runs throughout the entirety of the brief, Your Honor. I feel like I'm slightly hamstrung given the fact that in their reply brief, for the first time now, they're pinpointing 8283 and hammering it home. Well, when typically, right, when this issue is raised for the first time, I have an opportunity to respond. When it comes up for the first time in their reply or their gray brief, I'm deprived of that opportunity.
Okay, well, but on page 14 of their blue brief, they explain that the board found the prior art disclosed the plurality of application servers, a finding Hammond has not appealed, and they cite 81 to 84. Are you saying that that sentence, that whole paragraph, actually, on page 14 of their brief, didn't put you on notice that you should make this argument in your red brief?
Correct, Your Honor.
What
the plurality of servers, I'm sorry. Your
Honor. It's the same thing, page 30. On page 30, where they have in their issue preclusion argument, they make it clear what the differences are that are in the claim language.
The sole difference that they argue here, Your Honor, is the plurality versus singulate.
Yeah,
that is not my argument.
On page 30. Of
correct. I have that right
you
here.
You said that they never identified.
That's right. Well, there's a difference between a plurality of servers, Your Honor. I am not disputing. And we're not challenging the board's finding about a plurality of servers. That is not the difference, though, that I'm pointing out. The difference that's being pointed out is that you are now taking not a distributed architecture, but you're specifically assigning a single application to server one and a different application to server two.
What about towards the bottom of page 882, where the board says, we agree with petitioner and credit Mr. Lipoff's testimony that an ordinarily skilled artisan, quote, would have found it obvious to host each of, end quote, Gilmore's applications, quote, on separate servers, each executing its own application.
Yes, sir.
So, why isn't that particular finding directly applicable to the claim limitations we're talking about here for Claim 14, Claim 18?
Because once again, Your Honor, what this is describing here in the context of the claims that this was being relied upon, what this is describing is that you're going to take Gilmore disclosed applications, you're going to take those and you're going to put instances of those on each server, as opposed to putting different applications on different servers, which serves a different purpose.
Well, it says here separate servers, each executing its own application. Doesn't that sound to you like what we're finding here is that we've got multiple servers and with each server having its own application being executed on that server?
Yes, but those applications, Your Honor, are the same. Meaning, let me give you an example. If Claim 14 were to say, we were to acquire a first server with a first application and a second server with the first application, okay, I think that is what the board was getting at with this statement. And that's not what Claim 14 says. And there actually is discussion in the patent specification in column 8 that specifically talks about the load balancing and how it makes sense to have different applications be on different servers as opposed to having the same application running on concurrent servers. So I know, sorry, I don't know if you're...
I was just thinking, you know, before you go, because you're running out of time.
I had one other point I did want
to raise. What about Claim 18? What if we were to reverse on Claim 18, then why wouldn't, by operation of law, Claim 14 be invalid?
Because I think that Google has a burden to meet with respect to all of these claims, and they haven't even attempted to do that.
I'm really more asking you in the abstract. If Claim 18 is invalid, isn't Claim 14 unenforceable?
I would agree. If that's this panel's finding, I think I would agree as a matter of law, but I would disagree that that would have the same impact with respect to claims 15, 16, 17, or the other dependents that they didn't even attempt.
All right. So are you suggesting that if we were to invalidate Claim 18, we should also invalidate Claim 14?
Well, I'm suggesting you shouldn't invalidate any of them.
I understand that, but what if
I understand.
We're in a world where our hand is forced. We have no choice. Claim 18 has to be rendered unpatentable in view of collateral estoppel.
So I do not believe that they have done what they need to do, meaning Google, in terms of challenging Claim 14 successfully. I think that they failed to even appeal the actual findings, which they should be stuck with. Okay, they made a decision.
That's getting back to their theory for invalidity based on their petition.
Yes, sir.
To Claim 14. But now I'm talking about a different question, which is the application of collateral estoppel to Claim 18, which renders Claim 18 unpatentable. In the face of Claim 18's unpatentability, is there a reason why we should stop there rather than also reaching a conclusion that independent Claim 14 necessarily must also be unpatentable in view of Claim 18's unpatentability? So this hypothetical is based on a premise that you lose on Claim 18.
As I understand the law of collateral estoppel, I think legally in order to find in their favor on Claim 18, it would necessitate a finding that everything in Claim 14 is also met. The problem I have with it, though, is that they're asking this panel to essentially sweep under the rug Claim 14, not really focus on it, and instead do the domino approach of only focusing on the isolated element. That's why you have such short drift given in one paragraph to the differences.
I guess I really need a clean answer to Judge Chen's question. If we do hold Claim 18 invalid, is it your view that we should also hold Claim 14 invalid, or is there some separate reason why we shouldn't hold Claim 14 invalid?
Aside from, listen, I've given reasons. I don't want to go over them. I think the answer is legally, if you find 18 under collateral estoppel, 14 has to go with it. Okay, that's how I understand the law. The only other point I wanted to make, I understand I ran past just...
No, I'm going to let you go on, so I'm going to restore his time. But just really clear. So
yes.
If we find Claim 18 valid under collateral estoppel, you're okay with us deciding 14 is also valid for collateral estoppel. You don't have separate arguments right now that you want to make with regard to 14 on that theory.
No, you're not.
Okay. But 15, I understand that you have very separate arguments for 15, 16, 17, and 19.
Yes, sir.
Yes. And so you're not saying if we find 18 invalid for collateral estoppel and also kind of impute that to 14, which you've sort of acceded in allowing us to do, you do not believe that likewise applies 15, 16, 17, and 19.
I agree with you.
Okay.
Can you just briefly explain why that is so for 15 through 17 and 19?
I mean, they haven't even attempted to meet their burden with respect to those claims. So it would be, I mean, I can go back through it, but it'd be the burden argument. It falls squarely with them. They've not even raised it, waiver.
What about the fact that the board said, we are not going to consider the arguments with respect to those dependent claims. Instead, because Claim 14 is not proven invalid, we're not going to go into any more detail. Should we at least remand for the board to consider those claims?
Under the grounds presented in the petition?
Yes.
So, just so I understand the hypothetical, we're going to be killing some claims via collateral estoppel, but then remanding for others that they failed to consider. Is that correct?
That the board didn't consider.
I suppose that's an option. I'm not going to tell this panel that that's not an option. I believe it probably is an option.
Why wouldn't you tell this panel it's not an option? Did they ask for it in their blue brief? Did they raise
collateral estoppel
with regard to those claims?
No, the point I'm trying to make is first of all, let me just say this, Judge Stoll. Both parties have agreed on one thing here, which is that remand is not necessary or appropriate in this case. So let me just start there. Okay, and they haven't challenged those.
Yeah, but lots of parties agree something's not ambiguous. You say it's this, he says it's that, which are the exact opposites. So sometimes the fact that you agree remand is not necessary doesn't mean it's not necessary.
Understood. The second point that I wanted to make to this panel, I'll try and be brief with it. Google tries to say this case is so analogous to the Sovereign Software case, Westwood Chemical, Ohio Willow Wood, all these projects. Not a single one of those cases involved a situation where you had adjudicated claim versus adjudicated claim. Those cases involved an adjudicated claim and then trying to apply collateral estoppel to an unadjudicated claim. Okay, Google has had not one but two tries already to invalidate these claims. One at the district court, they argued indefiniteness, they were unsuccessful, and then the one we're here on today. And so they lost. They're not even challenging that finding before this panel. And so I would just submit that this is not the same situation as Sovereign, Westwood, Bourne's, and all the other cases they rely upon, because they had their shot and they failed. And they shouldn't be just given a do-over to try and redo it. And so for that reason, Your Honor, we respectfully request that this court should affirm the PTAB's findings, and we should be allowed to proceed.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Jakes, we'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
To counsel's last point, I think the MaxLinear case did invalidate a claim for collateral estoppel.
Pre-SAS. MaxLinear is decided 3 months before SAS.
That's true. I think we have an answer, though, on claim 14 from counsel.
Your boy, wasn't that a gift?
And if you look at, well, I think it's consistent with their position on page 23 of their red brief, where the premise of their argument is that claim 14 stands or falls with claim 18. They say, if claim 18, and I think that's consistent with their argument.
Can you respond to their argument about what the board was really communicating at A82 about what the board there was finding to be obvious, and that the other side is telling us, well, in view of claim 7 and 8, what really the expert and the board were all really talking about was the distribution of one application across multiple servers, as opposed to each server being devoted to its own unique application.
That may have been ultimately the issue that was being addressed. That's not what the board said. I think Your Honor quoted the portion of it that says each application server running its application. That I think that answers the question. They found that that was known and would have been obvious. So I think that answers it fully. As to going back to the SAS question, I don't have another answer for you, but I will point you to Justice Alito's concurrence in the Quozo case, where he said that the challenge to a dependent claim necessarily challenges the independent claim on the same grounds.
And just returning to that claim 14, really, no matter what we did with it at the Federal Circuit, it was like a dead man walking, right? I mean, you just can't. I don't know how any patentee could ever enforce it if Claim 18 were struck down.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that. We're asking the court to finish the job.
Wow, capital punishment.
No, the Claim 14 is based on everything that's in front of you. It has to be invalid.
Thank you, Mr. Jakes. I thank both counsel. This is a difficult case, and I appreciate your arguments. It's taken under submission.